Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome again, everyone, to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as most weeks, I'll be taking you out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those rich, of course, with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is a great pleasure to be back after several weeks away, three again, to be exact. 3 weeks without the opportunity to offer you some insights and stimulus within you that stimulus to your thinking and to get something going within you that can be useful and constructive as we all live into this era of extraordinary change. Today we're just hours, of course, beyond the 10-year memorial of the great 9/11 shock here in America that stunned us all and, oh so briefly, I think, opened the collective heart of the world. I take pause as we open today to acknowledge that distinct heart opening, that point in time where I think the tragedy that we experienced combined with the grace of the onlooking world to really bring a state of collective embrace among all civilized peoples of the world. All of that in contrast to the hatred, to the anger, to the violence expressed by Al-Qaeda and their act of terrorism. So I want to acknowledge that heart-opening state experienced 10 years ago. Although it was experienced, I think, briefly for humanity at large, because despite the source of its activation, I think it serves as an example of the love and the compassion that was seen in the post 9/11 events. And I think it most of all underlies the potential of humanity, the care, the concern, the love, all of which pervaded the field 10 years ago. And today I want to acknowledge that as we get started. But moreover, what I really like to do today is I want to begin with not only that, but with focus on a book. And it's perhaps a book that might be a visual metaphor and an alter ego to our show here. It's a book by István Bányai. It is entitled Zoom. Not Zoom with apostrophe D as in Zoomed Leadership, our show, but Zoom as in a camera lens without the D. István has created, in my mind, a wonderful wordless picture book. No text at all is included, and I think it reflects an emphasis on the perspectives that I continually invite us to both recognize and explore, perspectives that begin with narrow and really often a colorfully small view and expand it out toward the totality of everything. István's book, it's been published now in 18 countries. It was introduced here in the U.S. in 95. It's available on Amazon for under $5. Begins with a close-up view. And in this case, it's a colorfully orange, partial profile, the top part of a rooster's comb. And the book ultimately, through its progression of images, ends in the black void of space, the space of the universe at large. But it is what to me is the building process, the zoom-like camera lens perspective that I think is so relevant and so many ways provocative to our experience and so appropriate for the lead-in and the through line for our show, I think, today. István begins with an orange rooster comb, as I've said, but of course you don't really recognize that at first. What you really see is this orange star-like graphic. And then he zooms out, page by page, first to a whole colorful rooster, and then he zooms out more to show two kids looking out at the rooster in the yard via the observation through a wooden window and a wooden window pane and a wooden window sill. They're at the back of the house as they're doing so. And then he zooms out even further. He shows the kids, they're wearing their full clothing, the reds, the blues, the greens, and we can see and we can observe these kids from outside the front door of the house, standing in front of the window, looking out at the backyard, looking out at the rooster. And then the perspective continues to evolve. from 50 yards outside the front of the house with a more complete view now of the barnyard and the pigsty that's included, where you can see through the front door of the house to the kids at the window looking out the back at the rooster with the orange comb. And then he zooms out further. He zooms out further to show the barnyard and a half dozen other buildings and other houses where still you can see through the front door of the original house with the girl and the boy looking out the window at the rooster with the orange comb. And then Isfam takes us even out. He continues this ever wider view, this wider zoom, where you can see the hand of a boy reaching down and playing and placing, actually, another house in the assemblage of houses and the barnyard and the kids that are looking out the window. And we recognize then that our perception of where we thought we were was not what we thought it was. And in this level of zoom, we recognize a boy's hand is playing with toys out of a toy box, creating a scene of play that includes all that I've mentioned, all that Isfam has shown so far. And then Isfam zooms out even further. He zooms out to reveal that the hand coming into the play scene is not actually a boy's hand, but rather it's a young girl absorbed in the activity of play, drawing houses and kids and roosters from the toy box and playing. And then Isfam, again, just when we think we understand what we're looking at, he zooms out further, and he shows a set of fingers overlapping, covering part of the play world we just figured out. And he shows us that really, with a step further back, that the play scene with the girl assembling houses in the original barnyard, with two kids seen through the front door looking out the back window at a colorful rooster, is all really the cover shot on a magazine about toys. And a boy is actually holding the magazine in his left hand while falling asleep in a chair with a magazine between his legs and his fingers overlapping the picture and the scene that we have seen and has been emerging. So I hope you're getting a sense of the pictures and the flow Isfam is evolving here. Each picture he shows is actually a painting. It's a separate illustration, each of which takes us a further step out in a zoom perspective, revealing over and over again an expanded perspective and context about what is really going on. And of course, if you're a regular listener to Zoomed, you know that the critical, all-essential underpinning of leadership rests in that question of understanding about what is the truth of reality, what is the rich and relevant context that's at hand, and what is really going on. So I won't give you the whole Isfam illustrated story today. I don't want to take away from the pleasure of your own experience with it, because I do recommend that you either get it, get the book, buy it, or look it at the library. But let me just add a couple of more zoom out perspectives to make my opening point today. Because we think we now understand the story at hand. It's a boy looking at a toy magazine while snoozing in a chair. But there's more. The boy, when we scan out, is actually sitting poolside in the sun, and then further, we see that he's sitting at a poolside on a cruise ship, and that the cruise ship, through further zoom, is a big liner, and it's underway at sea with birds flying around it, waves being parted and pushed aside, with the good life firmly on our visual display. And again, we now know where we are, we think, until we zoom out further. And when we do that, we see, and Isfam takes us, that the cruise ship with the boy, with the magazine that includes the girl playing with the houses, that includes the barnyard, and a particular house with a back door that we see through at two kids looking at a window at the rooster, is all really, with yet one further zoomed out look, all simply an advertisement billboard on the side of a bus. And even further, a bus downtown in a major city street making a left turn. And now again, we know where we are. And then we see what looks like a shoe. With another step of the zoom, a shoe overlapping the scene of the downtown street with the bus making the left turn, with a signboard of the cruise ship, with the kid holding the toy magazine and the girl playing with the houses, including the one with the kid seen through the back door looking through the front window at the rooster with the orange comb. and the context evolves and evolves and evolves as the lens gets wider with a greater degree of macro zoom. It is enjoyable until we recognize that the bus and the billboard and the cruise ship and the pool scene and the toy magazine with the houses, kids, and roosters are all being looked at on the television screen of a cowboy sitting in the desert with his boot overlapping in front of his TV screen, sitting on the desert sand. And it goes on, from all the way down to all the way out, to an ever-expanding context, to an ever-evolving series of perspectives. And I'm only partway through Isvan Zoom rollout. I want you to go ahead and get that. Enjoy the experience. See the whole picture. See where it ends up for you. But the point today is that I want to begin being today and with coming shows even more explicit about zooming out and contextualizing some of what we have been talking about, in particular the end game of the debt supercycle and the continuing financial crisis. Because just like Isvan represents, I think it's important to recognize that there's a potential buildup of macro perspectives that can help us further contextualize the change and the dynamism that we're living into and the pain that for many is already at play and likely for many to come, but there is more. There is more to the picture. There's more to the story. So today, I want to begin, and I want to rather zoom in, just like we did 10 years ago when we were focused on the narrow, close, and personal with 9/11. But today, I don't want to talk about 9/11. Everyone else is doing that. Today, I want to begin with the debt crisis. I want to begin with just some perspectives on the European view. I want to take some macro perspectives out to look then at the larger context of potential that surrounds the crisis we're in. And even further out, I want to point to some of the more macro positive fundamentals that we are quickly losing sight of with attention on the micro and the crisis only. So today, I intend to be practical. I want to be incorporating some views and some micro realities brought to you and assimilating some different perspectives. John Malden, again, European Anticipation Bulletin, Tony Caldero, a number of others, the fourth turning with Strauss and Hahn. I want to bring them to bear. I want to help to add perspectives to your playbook of living into the future. I want to make it practical, and I want to do as Isvan has suggested to us, zoom out and build the context. We'll do that. And folks, take a break. I hear the music in my ears. Come back in a moment. We'll explore this today. Great to be here with you. Thanks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The Zoomed Leadership Conversation today, as well as shows both past and upcoming, are intended to illuminate perspectives on the great transition in motion, the extraordinary era of change that is affecting all of our personal lives, our organizations, our communities, and our governing institutions. Big shifts are happening, and more are coming. Some can be foreseen, but many are outside current paradigms of thought. All, however, ultimately will be shaped by new and expanding forms of leadership, capable of holding the widest possible views and the deepest forms of interconnection. Join Zoomed host John Schmidt weekly as he rides the rising wave of intelligence, moving us all toward a world of immense potential, dynamism, and economic, social, and environmental renewal. Zoomed is sponsored in part by Avastone Consulting, a source point for development of leadership and organizational resilience and sustainability for the last 25 years. Find John and his colleagues at Avastone via avastoneconsulting.com.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back with you today. Zoom, our show title, of course, more macro viewpoints, and I hope we can take Istvan's guide, Istvan's book, and bring it into a steady, larger view and contextualization as we go today. I think this actually may be part one of perhaps a series of shows on in doing so and on this topic. We're going to follow the dynamic thread of informed intelligence as it materializes, see what might actually come to bear. But let's get started today. Let me just start with a couple of scan-in perspectives, kind of that view of the rooster as we just described, but do it here with the debt supercycle, a couple of comments and perspectives, the emerging perspectives on Europe. Because it's Monday the 12th, Asia and the European markets were solidly down. Here in the U.S., they are down as well. And the financial markets, I must say, seem to be expressing or pricing in 90% plus a really big likelihood of a Greek default. The rumors over the trading circles I was scanning and the blogs over the weekend, it looks to me like the perspectives on it are simply rampant. Bloomberg, many others reported also that Germany is making contingency plans for this default. And of course, as Malden reports, Greece has issued at least three denials of that. But in the words of the 1980s British sitcom, who I've just momentarily forgotten, the quote is a good one, never believe anything until it has been officially denied. It has been denied, so I think we can begin believing it. But Germany is assuming, at a minimum, a 50% loss for their banks and for their insurance companies. It's more likely to be even more than that, with a beyond Greece contagion that might kick in. But Germany, in many ways, is considering Plan B now. Plan B about what actually happens with the whole euro world. They're signaling concerns that Greece's future to stick to its budget-cutting targets is threatening overall European efforts to tame this overall debt crisis that we're in. They're on a knife's edge, in the words of German Finance Minister Schäuble over the weekend, and if Greece can't meet aid terms, it's up to them to figure out how to get financing without Europe's help. Now, that's a big statement. And that leads us even further toward the crisis. Because, of course, from our earlier shows, you'll recall, it can't be a surprise that Greece could default. Greece has a debt-to-GDP ratio of 140%, probably on the way to about 180% by the year end, a deficit north of 15%. They simply, folks, can't afford interest payments on their debt. And Greece has announced recently, if you have seen the reports in recent weeks, they've reported a larger fiscal deficit for the first 6 months of the year than promised, actually 25% greater. But again, no surprise, because austerity measures also bring with it a slowdown in growth, which aggravates the whole mess. So they're also being asked to further cut their deficit, Greece that is, by 4% for the next 3 to 4 years, which generates a bigger slowdown yet, even maybe a depression for them. They get even further from the goals, no matter how far and fast they run. They seem, in my mind, to be in, as others describe as well, a debt death spiral. There may be no way out, short of Europe simply bailing them out for nothing, and that, as we can see from Germany, is not likely to happen. So overall, there's all kinds of analysis, there's all kinds of looks on this, all kinds of perspectives, narrow and large, all kinds of opinions about how to deal with this Greece situation and the peripheral problems, the contagion, Italy, Spain, and others. But how to not only deal with Greece, but also the beginning of the further string of escalating crises. In general, folks, it all shows, as we've been talking about, there's no free lunch. it's not a matter of pain or no pain, but it's rather a matter of how much pain, how it's going to be shared, and what will the sandpile impact on the rest of the world really be. And so the question comes up, can a total crisis be avoided? Some say yes, some say no, but the global economy is at a crossroads. And I thought I found actually a very useful perspective to add to the mix today, John Hussman. And in his words, he says, this situation demands a decision about whom our leaders in the world are going to defend. And the choice is either to defend bondholders or the choice is to defend the public. It's a great question, folks. Get that. Defend the bondholders or to defend the public. And defending the bondholders, we're defending the existing owners of mismanaged banks, unserviceable peripheral debt that I'm mentioning, and lenders who so misallocated their capital by reaching for this huge money, huge fees, huge yields, and by making mortgage loans to absolutely anyone who had a pulse. Defending them is going to require fiscal austerity that we've been talking about and government spending of already depressed economies, and it's going to call for the use of public funds to recapitalize these very poor stewards of capital. So, defending the bondholders will do nothing, though, for job creation, foreclosure reduction, or economic recovery. That's choice one, Hussman really describes. The second alternative is to defend the public by focusing on the reduction of unserviceable debt burdens by restructuring mortgages and peripheral sovereign debt, recognizing the most financial institutions have shareholder capital and debt, and they and their own bondholders can absorb losses without hurting customers and counterparties. But also recognize that properly restructuring the debt is going to wipe out many existing holders of mismanaged financials. It's going to require a transfer of ownership as well and a recapitalization by better standards. This alternative also likely requires a fiscal policy that accepts larger deficits now for a trajectory of big changes in long-term spending down the road. Wow, those are in Hussman's words. Who are we defending? Who are we protecting? A fabulous, simple question for us. And what's the net of this? Well, we can't get to equilibrium. We can't get through this until our balance sheet's problems are addressed. And remember, this isn't a stimulus problem alone. It's a financial crisis. It requires debt and mortgage restructuring, and large-scale restructuring will not be painless. It will likely result in great market turbulence and crises from the financial sector, screams from them as well about a global financial meltdown, and don't forget that phrase, some will be wiped out. So are the world central banks and the main institutions worried? You bet. The prospect of another 2008 Lehman-type credit crisis, I think, folks, has to be on our radar screen. It's not a given, but a clear possibility, a probability, as Malden so clearly pointed out in his weekend blog as well. And it's something we should really be preparing for, and we should be preparing ourselves with clarity as well about the politicians and leaders and who will represent us in making that decision. Tough time, tough choices, tough backdrop in the U.S. in particular with the nature of the polarity of our political system. And it asks the question for me too, how deep can this crisis really go and who is really making the decision? In Simon Johnson's words, remember, he said, we've had a financial coup. The financial world is running what happens here. Realities are coming our way. Is it real and true? Is it, as Simon says, the banks too global to fail now? And are they actually pushing the decisions? Well, that's a picture for us. That's the picture of the micro view of the future. But there's a wider view toward a future. And the wider view of the future is really where I'd like to go today. I'd like to step back from this. There's a crisis here, I think, that we can begin to say is here, and we're going to have it. I think we can consider in a minimum, no matter how you slice it, at a minimum, there's a continuation of rather tough times. For those unemployment, I'm thinking that are unemployed, you're saying, wow, is it tough times? It could get much, much worse. But beyond the tough times, If we, as Isfahan has said, we pull back and take a wider zoom and step out further away from this end game of the debt supercycle, do we get a view? Do we get something that gives us a positive sense of the potentiality of the future, the potential that I was referring to as we opened? And where do we go for this view is the question. Well, I think one place to start is regarding the macro patterns at play. It's by looking at reflections of the economy, the markets, and cycles over time. And I think we can see that through a combination, as I've mentioned before, about objective Elliott wave analysis, Tony Caldero and some of works, and combine that with cycles of history as researched by William Strauss and Neil Howe in their book called The Fourth Turning, what the cycles of history tell us about America's next rendezvous with destiny. It's actually others as well as America. They're focused largely on America, though. A lot of detail in these books, a lot to summarize, but I'd like to get in the big picture here today what Strauss and Howe explain in detail, that there are four generational cycles that we need to be aware of, and where are we within these cycles, because they give us a view, a zoom out that is rich and powerful for us. What they say is that underpinning these cycles is a dependence on how we raise our children. Each generation raises their children in a predictable, cyclical pattern, creating four basic archetypes. They go on to talk about those archetypes, mass psychology. They call them the prophet, the nomad, the hero, and the artist. But I don't want to go there. I really want to talk about the reflection of those. And without going to the detail, these archetypes actually, as they mature and they begin to impress upon their nature in society and positions of leadership and power, there are four phases or turnings of the human cycle unfolding, and we are amid one of them in particular right now, with a view in the larger context of where we're coming from. One of those is a high growth period. That's an upbeat area of strengthening institutions. It's really a flow, growth, power. It's actually just an opening and an expansion. The second is an awakening and a protest period, a passionate era of real upheaval, maybe spiritual upheaval, where civic order comes under sort of attack from a new values regime. The third is an unraveling period. It's a downcast era. It's one where there's a strengthening individualism and a weakening of institutions. All of that happens in a way that the old civic order starts to decay and things start to implant themselves in a new value regime. And finally, there's a crisis period. There's a crisis period, and it's a decisive era of secular upheaval. That, in fact, folks, is where we are now. This sounds generally interesting. But I think when we start to bring this back to reality and put this into where are these cycles in our history and time, what are those patterns we've experienced, we can see very precisely what we've been living through in the last 70 years. And moreover, where we are right now. And I want to give you a sense of that. I want to give you a sense of the growth period, the protest period, the unraveling period, the crisis period we're in now, and what is the fourth turning? Where does that lead us? That's where I want to come back in a couple of minutes. It's a positive view, folks. Take a break. Join me. We'll continue the conversation. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Zoomed Leadership is sponsored in part by Cosmos Journal, the journal for world citizens creating the new civilization. More than just a publication, Cosmos is committed to informing, inspiring, and engaging the world in the transition to an emerging, sustainable, just, and compassionate global culture and civilization that works for all. For over 10 years, Cosmos has been a leading voice that tracks the deep systemic transformations already occurring at the margins of society as our institutions prove unable to serve the needs of the times. Published twice a year in print and digital, Cosmos includes leading-edge articles from social change leaders on the global commons, people power, global governance, new economics, collective intelligence, and cultivating the self. The impact of these paradigm-changing ideas is enhanced through stunning visuals and photographic stories that motivate to action. Start exploring Cosmos Journal and continue opening your perspectives about leadership and the emerging great transition at cosmosjournal.org. Join the Cosmos Leaders of Change and make a difference today. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today. Title of our show, Zoom. It is our working metaphor, István Bányai's book by the same name, our metaphor about taking a larger view. And what I'm suggesting as we left the last segment is that we draw away from this crisis, this European crisis, this global financial crisis, this end of the debt supercycle, and we take a larger placement and view. We step back and get a bigger view, just as we did back in the flow of the photos out of Zoom with István, and we say, where are we today? And I was offering to you that Strauss and Hahn have done a magnificent job. Strauss and Howe have done a magnificent job of framing up four actual cycles. And the cycles we have seen are clear and distinct. Crisis period, which was the fourth turning, and we can actually begin then because it's the first one that's in our recognition, and it's the one that we talk a lot about today because it was that period of the Great Depression, 1929 to roughly the late 40s. It was that crisis early on that we all recognize our parents and our grandparents lived through, and it's what we're comparing the financial crisis today to that great contraction. That was a fourth turning. And where did that turning evolve? That turning evolved into a first turning, a growth period, which happened roughly from the late 40s to the late 60s. And what evolved from there? These happen in roughly 20-year cycles. It evolved into the second turning, the period of awakening and protest, that period from the mid to late 60s to the early 80s. And you can recall this. We can feel the protest sense of this. Recall the 60s, the Vietnam protests, the turbulence, the turmoil. Remember, just recall there. Many of you actually lived in it just as I did. And there then, that actually unfolded and evolved after that 20-year period, that 20-year cycle, into the period unraveling, the third turning from the late 80s through deregulation, financial system sort of running amok, the late 80s to 2000, and then in 2000, the fourth turning begins again, the crisis. And we, in fact, folks, if we look at it from that perspective, been in crisis since 2000. And roughly, we might expect, we're in it now, and we might expect that it runs through plus or minus, say, 2016, plus or minus maybe a little bit more. But it does reinforce this macro view of the crisis perspective that we've just described again about Europe and the world financial situation. But moreover, what I think it suggests that we don't have sight of, at roughly 2016 or perhaps earlier, perhaps later, at conclusion of this fourth turning crisis cycle, we'll be entering again the first turning into a massive growth period. And when we overlay the objective Elliott wave work on this, and we start to look at bull markets and bear markets and begin to recognize what those mean, we see as we overlap it that we had big bull market growth experienced both during the growth cycles and the unraveling cycles. We saw them in the 40s and the 60s, and we saw them in the 80s to the 2000s. And we have roughly an 18 to 20 year bull market cycle that's going to begin at the end of this current crisis. A very big growth cycle. So I think we ought to keep this in perspective. We've also seen, and we might actually even consider this in light of where we are now in terms of bear markets, because they alternate as well. They alternate, I won't go into that level of detail. They alternate between deflationary and inflationary forces, but without going there, to better understand this, what you actually get is a bear cycle unfolds in a particular way, has a preliminary peak as it did in 97 and 2000. It has a downtrend that follows like in 67 to 70, which was the Nifty 50 collapse, if you remember that as I do, and then in 2000 to 2002, which was the NASDAQ tech collapse. It then hits a preliminary peak, approaches the high, just as we did in 73 and 2007, and then a very nasty bear market that follows, which creates the actual price low of the cycle, as we saw back in 73 and 74, and we saw in 2007 to 2009. The market finally enters another bear market to end the overall secular bear and the crisis at large, folks, we have entered that bear market now. Although the confirmation of it isn't yet in the mainstream, it's not in the dialogue, it's not technically and quantitatively confirmed in every way, but that does seem to be where we are, a very bear market. Recognize that. But again, what does all this point to? Well, it indicates, despite the impending doom and gloom, despite the hard times or even various forms of collapse on the horizon, from a zoom-out perspective, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and it looks like a bright sun and not another train coming at us. And to me, this all shows up in a very interesting way. You can look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You can look at the index prices going back to 29 to present day. You can overlay on that the bull and the bear markets. The pattern, folks, is compelling. It's relevant to consider. Tony Caldero has looked at this. If people have been examining this, there's actually 6,000 years of underpinning data about these cycles that's out there through civilization after civilization. It's just like the larger view that Istvan's boy on the cruise liner really suggested, or it's like the signboard on the New York Metro bus. It's cycles of human psychology indeed. They're reflective of turnings, but moreover of new potential and evolving emerging consciousness. But most importantly here, a great economic bull market is on the horizon according to the patterns of this human condition that Strauss and Howe are really suggesting, and coupling that with objective Elliott wave. It's not here, folks. There's more pain to endure. But from this macro cycles review, it's on the other side of the steep climb ahead. So we have both gloominess and we have optimism. Not one or the other, but we have both at hand. It is a both and proposition. It is not a polarity of either or. We'll experience both, and we'll experience this as a further evolution, as it has every time in the nature of humanity. So it's interesting, huh? And let's just put this layer of perspective on the show. Last time we talked with Richard Heinberg, he really pointed to the enormous challenges of economy, energy, environment. But I got to tell you, this cycle perspective suggests that we don't know yet what we don't know. He's right on that he's suggesting, and looking at the details of this, that energy is constraining. It will provide this drawing in contractive view to it. But we don't know what we don't know. We don't know how to address the energy issues yet. But the cycles do suggest, don't they, that breakthroughs are likely to come. They always really have. And they also really suggest to me, from a personal and societal standpoint, that we're on the early edges here, folks, of possibly the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind. There are going to be, as I call out, wipeouts. There will be huge gainers, huge winners, huge losers, huge gainers, huge getting wiped outers. And depending upon how you protect oneself and how you protect your capital base, how one positions oneself to weather this financial storm, and how one prepares with our hard-earned assets for the start of the next growth cycle, we will be prepared for the growth or not. That's part of what our preparation is. That's part of why I have been talking for quite a while now about the nature of this era of extraordinary change, to be providing a view toward it, preparing to provide the real resilience and what we have to do to not get into that situation where we're wiped out. So I wouldn't be counting on a number of things. I wouldn't necessarily be counting on bonds to keep their value. I wouldn't be counting on gold. I wouldn't be betting against gold. I wouldn't be counting on growth stocks to do very well. But at the bottom of the crisis, I would say we're going to see some blue light specials, which ultimately will be the great financial wealth gainers for the coming growth cycle. Remember, folks, the commodity bull cycles are different. They offset in reverse. So we see gold as it's going up now. We see gold as it is at over 1900 before it started its current correction. And this is what we'll look at. So what we might conclude here is, what should we be doing? We should be preparing ourselves. Are we getting a picture of where we are? Well, I would think this gold situation, the high over 1900 with its more upside to come, I think it gives us a sense of where we are in this end game. There's more to come. But I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not really putting you in that position, not suggesting that, but I am asking you to consider the perspectives about where we are, incorporate them, prepare yourself, and look at what might actually occur with this transfer of wealth in history. Prepare yourself for it. It's coming, folks. It may take a variety of forms, but beware. So that's the next level of the zoom out. A zoom out for the European and I think the integrated world financial crisis, to the macro cycle of the patterns that we're in and what's to come. We're in a crisis. We're in the end game of the debt super cycle. We're in the second sharp element of the bear market that's going to come up to it. But I think we also have to recognize that we are potentially, and looking at the patterns of the new era of growth, the possibility, the potential. We can't plot the future, but we can anticipate, we can monitor and adjust, we can get ready, we can do that. And when we come back, I hear the music in my ears, I'd like to take another step. I'd like to even take one step above this perspective of cycles today, because I'd like to talk about some other fundamentals that we often lose sight of. I'd like to remind you of those and suggest that's where we end today. Come back in a few moments, back on Zoomed. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. The experts are here. Voice America Business Network.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, last segment today. We are in the midst of Zoom, and let me open up a view toward another, perhaps further scan out, to a further zoom to the macro, the other part of the crisis I so often hear, and I hear writing and I see about all the time. It's the end of America, the decline of America, the end of the American age and its position of prominence in the world. Folks, from a macro view, from a further zoom out view, let me give you some perspective on this. I don't think we're necessarily going to see that in our lifetime, but let me provide a view on that. And let me point to some very baseline strategic reasons, not because I'm American, but because I think the zoom out perspective provides some significant evidence that while our position may be tarnished, it's not in jeopardy of collapse. And what I'm going to do here is, Istvam had a very geographic orientation to what he really presented in Zoom. I'm going to dovetail that, and I'm going to take, in many respects, a closing sort of a geographic orientation to this. And I want to turn to Stratford Intelligence, and they've got some interesting reports recently that part one of which is about the geopolitics of the United States, the inevitable empire. The second part of it is about America, identity, and threats for tomorrow. Well done, first-class organization, first-class research, but I want to start with what they're really pointing to. And with America, it felt like it was a closing link to Istvam today. And it's about America geography, because it is simply impressive. The Greater Mississippi Basin, folks, together with the Intracoastal Waterway, has more kilometers of navigable waterways from the rest of the world combined. I think you're going to see that it has strengths that are unmatched. We can look at the positives or strengths behind the inevitable empire, but the American Mist West, when overlaid by this waterway and its world's, in fact, it is the world's largest contiguous piece of farmland in conjunction with this waterway, and the U.S. Atlantic coast, coupled with that, processes more major ports than the rest of the Western Hemisphere combined. Two vast oceans have insulated the U.S. from Asia and European powers. Deserts separate the U.S. from Mexico to the south, and while lakes and forests separate the population centers from Canada, folks, the U.S. has capital, food surpluses, and political insulation in excess of every other country in the world, exceeding by large margins. So like the Turks of long ago, we Americans may not be so important because of who we are, but rather because of where we live. So the conversation naturally goes to the strength from geographic understanding before all else. It is a Zoom understanding that we can't deny. It starts with America and the North America core that I'm really suggesting. And I think you can see, and if you look at these reports, and I'll actually describe these more as we go, this core is substantial in relation to the growth cycle of the world and the period of post-crisis growth to come. And let me today, in the short period left, just point to a few significant elements of this North American core, because it is the most distinctive, important feature of North America, the river network in the middle third of the continent with its components that are larger in both volume and length than most of the world's rivers, and it really sets apart the United States because of this network, because very few of America's tributaries begin at high elevations, making vast tracts of these rivers easily navigable. In the case of the Mississippi, the head of the navigation starts 3,000 kilometers inward. Inland, the network itself consists of six distinct river systems, and their unified nature, folks, enhances the region's usefulness and its potential economic and political power. There's all kinds of data. There's all kinds of background to go on behind this. It's difficult to get all to that, but I really want to suggest to you that there is such a strong capital resource underpinning to the nation, starting with this geographic core. It takes 10 to 30 times, folks, 10 to 30 times cheaper to move stuff and our goods and what we really ship around over land than it over water than it does by land. It makes the U.S. and others with this kind of a robust maritime option a world power. It makes us extremely capital rich when compared to countries limited to land only options. And all of that together, and you can couple other things relative to the watershed of the greater Mississippi River Basin. You can talk about that and the navigation that we have with it. There are many other substantial features of this core. I can see we don't have time to get into these today. But all of these together provide a raw power, a raw capital power. In summary, the basin itself is the America, the continental core, and whoever controls that core, whoever controls and has the certainty of dominating not only the East Coast and the Great Lakes region, but also has the agricultural, transport, trade, and political unification capacity to be a world power without having to interact with the rest of the global system. This Istvan steadily increasing view, this zooming out, this geographic profile is appropriate for us to consider. The immense wealth of place that we have here in the United States puts us in an incredible position, folks. Incredible. So I think Istvan today has opened the door for us. I hope you're beginning to get a sense of some of the possibilities. I'd like to talk more about what is involved in some of the perspectives on the U.S. and other countries and where this growth orientation actually goes. But let me close today with this recognition on Zoomed Leadership. This show, I think, in relation to Istvan and Zoomed. Because what we also add on this show to Istvan's Zoomed view at each level of scale is the acknowledgement of even more. It is not only the capital underpinnings, but it is the interior, exterior dimensions and interplay, the intersection of culture, systems, mindsets, and behaviors at multiple levels of depth, all of which provide part of the totality of what we're looking at, part of the total view, the view of totality that is manifesting itself in any moment. And our role as leaders, folks, in my mind, and the reason I'm bringing this to bear today with Istvan and just touching on the cycles, touching on this central core of capital and wealth that we have, our role of leaders is to be present to the many faces of this totality, to live within this presence of what is dynamically unfolding in every instant. It's not to be lifting off from and being separate to it, but it is rather living in this presence at this moment, as this presence, as the living hand of presence unfolds, and it is up to us to take a look, to be clearly willing to open to the multiple views, to the expanding perspectives, to take Istvan's work into our own life, to really understand and recognize that every situation needs that further look, that larger and greater understanding, the potential, the positive nature of where the world is emerging amidst this challenge and difficulty. That's part of our leadership. That's part of what we bring to bear in our political system, our organizations, our families, our communities. That time is now. And enjoy, folks. Find Istvan's book. It's enjoyable. It's a good one. Maybe it'll stimulate you. Maybe it will stimulate the action we need in the world. Have a great week, folks. Delight to be back. Look forward to get back in the saddle with you. Much, much more to come. Zoomed out for this Monday of down market period, but upside immense possibility. See you later, folks. Thanks. Enjoy.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.